Good morning and welcome. My name is Renee and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I am on the program committee and I was retreat registrar with Nancy and I'm on communications committee. Oh, I'm the newsletter editor as well. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors and guests and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member or a member of the wider community. So next up are our opening words, which are by David Breeden, and Kate Liu is going to read it.
Advent, Adventus, means waiting, and the holiday season is nothing if not waiting. To get done the chores, to find the right gift, to find time for quiet moments, to accept that our loved ones will not always be as we wish them to be. We will light the chalice this holiday season, this time of waiting, to remind ourselves to enjoy the moment, the now, of our lives. Yes, much is coming, and always we wait, but those things to come will also be now, when they come.
Next up is our chalice lighting. And Nancy Wonderland's going to help me light the chalice. I will read the words. This is by the same author, actually, David Breeden. The first chalice lighting of Advent reminds us to be patient. In this holiday season, may we find the patience to forgive ourselves, to forgive those who do not do as we wish. May we find patience, may we find the wisdom to let be, which is something I need to. All right, our presenter today is Rabbi Bonnie. You know what? I forgot to ask how you pronounce your last name.
Margulis.
Okay. She is the founder of and executive director of Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice and chair of the Wisconsin Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, as well as a member of the board of the NAACP of Dane County, and a founder and staff for the Dane Sanctuary Coalition. She was a founding board member of We Are Many, United Against Hate, which we actually heard from that speaker a few weeks ago. Today's presentation, The Jewish and UU Roots of Social Justice, is linked with our second and sixth UU principles. So,
no, I haven't clipped it in, I'm going to clip it out. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about a subject which is near and dear to my heart, which is the imperative for faith communities to be involved in work of social justice. It's been my privilege to be an activist and a grassroots organizer in the Jewish and interfaith communities for, oh my, for 30 plus years. Yes, I'm old. And it's work that I love, and it's work that I'm passionate about. And I work on a wide variety of different social justice issues and have for all these years. And part of the work that I do includes training others to do this work, to do social justice activism, and to do organizing in an interfaith setting. And when I do these trainings, people ask me, so how do we get started? Where do we go first when we want to reach out to different faith communities? And I always say, well, start with the low-hanging fruit. So the low-hanging fruit is always the Jewish community and the Unitarian community. Because wherever there's a cry for justice, there are Jews and there are Unitarians in the lead, in the forefront, fighting for what's right. The roots of social justice in the UU community lies within your fundamental principles of faith. They include the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth for UU congregations. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within UU congregations and in society at large. The goal of world community with peace and liberty and justice for all. And respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are all part. The first and seventh principles are the nexus of the Unitarian Universalist commitment to social justice, promoting the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and honoring the interconnectedness of all existence, along with the belief in universal love. Altogether, these provide the basis for Unitarian Universalist commitment to the work of social justice. For the Jewish community, all of our beliefs, all of our practices, all of our teachings and traditions always start with text. So our commitment to social justice is rooted in the stories of creation and the exodus from slavery in Egypt. The story of redemption from slavery in Egypt is our foundational story. It's at the heart of everything that we do, everything that we believe. We recite it in our daily and Shabbat liturgy. It's the centerpiece of our yearly cycle of holidays. And it is this experience of liberation at God's hand from slavery, which culminated in the covenant at Sinai, that solidifies us as a united nation under one God. The story of the Exodus, combined with the story of creation, together gives us the textual and theological underpinnings of our imperative to engage in tikkun olam, in the repair of the world. From the Exodus story comes our commitment to ending slavery in all its forms, to feeding the hungry and housing the homeless, and to ending oppression for all peoples. Repeatedly, the Torah, the five books of Moses, instructs us to treat the stranger among us with justice and equality and with love, because we remember what it was like to be strangers in a strange land. From the story of creation, we're taught that we are all created in the image of God. The full implication of exactly what that means for us, for how we live in the world, for how we live with each other, isn't really made clear in the Genesis story. It isn't clear till the book of Leviticus. And in Leviticus 19, which we know as the Holiness Code, that then we find out most explicitly, most clearly, what it means to be made in the image of God. At the beginning of the Holiness Code, and as a kind of a refrain throughout, it says, "Be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." And then what comes after that is a whole list of different ways of being holy. It's not meant to be an exhaustive list. It's meant to be, here are some examples, here are some ways of being holy, and you're supposed to extrapolate from that what it means in general to be holy. And you might expect that that list, being holy like God is holy, might focus on ritual, on the cultic sacrifices that the Israelites used as their way of worship, on all the, sort of the religious aspects of life, and on our relationship with the divine. But that's not what it is. There are a couple of laws that focus on that, but for the vast majority of the laws that are mentioned in the Holiness Code, they focus entirely on what we would call acts of social justice, and they focus entirely on our relationship with each other. That's what it means to be holy. So they include a system for providing food for the poor, laws for justice in our business dealings, laws for justice in our court system, laws for how to treat people with physical challenges, and laws for how we are to treat the stranger among us. This commitment to bringing justice into the world is made more explicit in the words of our prophets. Now, some of our prophets were concerned with making sure that the Israelites followed the religious practices of the Israelite cult, but for the most part, the major concern of our prophets was that how we treat each other, and that we treat each other with social justice. And Isaiah is the prime example of this. Every year at Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement, the most solemn day in the Jewish calendar, we read from Isaiah 58. And Yom Kippur is a day of fasting, and a day that we spend in synagogue all day praying, beating our breasts, reciting our sins, asking God for forgiveness. But we read in Isaiah that all the fasting and all the breast beating and all of the reciting of sins in the world don't mean anything to God unless they are accompanied with acts of social justice, unless they are accompanied with looking out for the widow, for the orphan, for the enslaved, for the hungry, for the homeless, for the naked. If we don't engage in acts of social justice, if we don't engage in partnership with God in repairing this world, then all the breastfeeding and fasting and praying in the world mean nothing. And beyond the text, the 4,000 years of Jewish history have taught us the importance of speaking out wherever we find injustice. Our long history of oppression, of being a suspect minority, of forced conversions, of expulsions, of pogroms, of the ultimate act of genocide, the Holocaust. These have ingrained in us the understanding that our safety lies in everyone's safety, that justice for some must mean justice for all, and that to remain silent in the face of injustice is to be complicit in that injustice. It was that belief in the necessity of standing up and speaking out that led to our Jewish community here in Madison being involved in the uprising in 2011, in the protests against Act 10, the assault on workers' rights, and on Governor Scott Walker's first budget, which slashed education, healthcare spending, public transportation, so many areas that were of help to the people in our society who most needed it. And so at that time, the Jewish community got together and said, well, what's our role? What do we do in this time period? And all the faith communities really were involved. The UUs were involved, the Jewish community, the Methodist community, and all of us, if you remember, those of you who were here at the time, we all, each community took a night and held vigils, candlelight vigils at the Capitol. And for the Jewish community, it was Monday night. And so every Monday night in the freezing cold, my wonderful husband, who's back there, was leading services out on the front steps of the Capitol and playing his accordion, even though his fingers were freezing off, because it was an imperative that we take part in what was going on, that we as people of faith raised our voices. So at that time, one of our colleagues, Rabbi Lori Zimmerman, the rabbi at Shaare Shemayim, she talked to my colleagues and I and said, you know, the six of us, the six rabbis who were in Madison at the time, we need to go and speak to Governor Walker. He says he's a man of faith. So we need to really call him on that and say, here we are, we're six rabbis, we represent a faith community, and we want you to know that what we see going on here is not something that the faith community supports, and it doesn't reflect the values and beliefs of the people of Wisconsin. And so while we are waiting to get this appointment with the governor, we're going to go to the Capitol. Each of us will take a Monday afternoon, and we are going to study Jewish text on worker justice and invite anybody passing by who wants to join us to join in our text study. So we all said, great, and we each took a Monday afternoon to do this. And in the meantime, I tried to get a meeting with the governor. I tried email, I tried phone calls, there was no response. So it was my Monday to go, and it must have been President's Weekend or something, because my son was off of school. He was 13 at the time, he's now 22, but at the time he was 13. And so we went with our little text study, and we were actually right outside the governor's office. So I said, Joshie, let's go. We're right there. We'll just walk into the office, and we'll try and get a date to meet with the governor. Well, you can't actually do that, because There's a desk that goes across three quarters of the hallway in front of the governor's office, and there's somebody there, and they stop you. And then we're surrounded by state troopers. We're all like 8 feet tall, and I'm about 5'1", and my son at the time was about 4'8", and I'm like, what do you think that we're going to do? So we weren't allowed to go into the governor's office, but somebody went in and came out with the scheduler's business card, and so I finally was able to get a meeting. Not with the governor. He wouldn't meet with us, but with the governor's staff. And so I said to my rabbinic colleagues, you know, Governor Walker could not care less what six rabbis in Madison think about anything. So we really need to make this broader. And so through my friends at Madison Area Urban Ministry and Wisconsin Council of Churches, and then the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice, which is now Worker Justice Wisconsin, I said, we'll just tell everybody we have this date who wants to come. So we ended up bringing about 28 different clergy and faith leaders from all different faith traditions, and we met with the governor's staff for about an hour. It was, as you can imagine, a very Twilight Zone conversation. Our worldviews were completely not in connection with each other at all. But after the meeting, some of us held back and we debriefed and we decided we really needed to be educating our congregations about what was going on and why this was something that the faith community needed to be involved in, why the faith voice needed to be heard. And so we worked in a very ad hoc way for about a year. And after a year, our governor, being a gift that kept on giving, every day there was a new outrage in the paper, so we were not worried that we were losing momentum or that, you know, our passions were waning or anything. And so after about a year, we officially organized as Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice. And I brought together a group, we had about 40, 45 people in a room, and I just led them through an exercise of brainstorming, what are the issues that you most want to see us focus on? And my two basic principles were, I don't want to reinvent the wheel, and I don't want to duplicate effort. So if there's areas where the faith community is already working, we don't need to do that. So Wisdom does a fabulous job working on criminal justice reform. We don't need to focus on that. We'll support them in their work. We'll sign on to things. We'll stand with them. But we don't need to take the lead on that because they've got that covered. We don't need to be in the forefront on LGBTQ issues because Fair Wisconsin, while not itself a faith-based organization, at the time had a very active faith outreach project. And so we are be there to support them and sign on to things, but we don't need to take the lead on that. Healthcare reform. The Affordable Care Act was just coming into being implemented. And so healthcare reform became one of our major core issues and still is to this day. And repairing the social safety net. So issues of hunger and food insecurity, housing and homelessness, these are among our core issues. And as we delved into those issues, we got more and more involved in worker justice issues and economic justice issues, and started to hear from people that we're all siloed in our different organizations. We work on childcare over there, and they work on public transportation over there, and they work on Fight for 15 over here. And wouldn't it be great if our voices were combined and we could work together? We would be so much stronger. So I got sick of hearing people complain about that and not doing anything about it. So I started calling around to all the organizations where I had connections and said, if we formed a coalition and you actually could talk to people who work in areas other than your own, would you be interested? And about 40 different organizations said yes. So we formed the Dignity at Work Coalition. So Dignity at Work is faith communities and some direct service organizations and some advocacy organizations and some labor. And we work together on issues that make for sustainable jobs that help us to sustain our families. So fair pay, living wage, sustainable hours, paid sick leave, paid family leave, affordable child care, access to public transportation, pension protection, affordable housing, ending gender and racial discrimination in employment and hiring practices, and the right to organize are the issues that Dignity at Work works on in coalition with each other. In 2016, in November of 2016, there was what some of us might have considered to be a cataclysmic event. I'll let you think back to November of 2016 to what that might have been. In the wake of the 2016 election, we brought together a group of our clergy and activists, and we said, okay, so this has been probably one of the ugliest election years we've ever seen. The rhetoric around immigrants, the misogyny, the homophobia, the Islamophobia, the anti-Semitism, unprecedented. What is our role as a faith community in addressing this new reality that we find ourselves in? And so we kind of went around the room and we asked people to say, what were they most passionate about? What were they most committed to? What were they most afraid of? And what did they want the faith community to speak out on? And we had invited Voces de la Frontera, the immigrant rights organization in Milwaukee, to send somebody to our meeting. And as we went around the room and we got to Mario Garcia Sierra, he said, what the immigrant community wants from the faith community is sanctuary. And this is something that we had not had on our radar at all. We didn't know anything about. We didn't know what it meant. But you ask the question, you have to be prepared to hear the answer and respond. So we started educating ourselves, and then we started going around to all the congregations, including Prairie UU, and said, this is what sanctuary means, and this is why it's important for the faith community to stand up and stand with our immigrant brothers and sisters. And so 2.5 years ago, we formed the Dane Sanctuary Coalition, of which you all are a part. The work of the coalition has grown tremendously. As I hope you're all aware, we're currently housing a family not in sanctuary because they're not at risk for deportation, but they are asylum seekers. And we've been housing them at one of our sanctuary sites since the end of September. And by next week, we hope, keep your fingers crossed, that they are preparing to move into stable housing. We also have a very active volunteer driver program. So if people need to get to Milwaukee for their ICE check-ins, or they need to get to Chicago for their immigration hearings, and they don't have access to transportation. And the lawyers, as much as they would love to, can't always be taking a whole day to drive back and forth to Chicago or to Milwaukee. And so we have volunteers who've been trained who will take somebody to Milwaukee or to Chicago. And it's not just giving them a ride, but you park and you go in with them and you help them find the right room and you stay with them through their proceedings and make sure that they're okay and that they have you there as that moral support and backup. And we have heard over and over and over again from the immigrant community and from the immigrant rights organizations and from the immigration lawyers how incredibly valuable this service is. And so I encourage all of you, if you are interested in being part of that project, to please let me know, because we need more drivers. Sometimes we have 24 hours notice that somebody needs to get to Chicago or to Milwaukee. And you know, people work during the day and it's not always that easy to drop what you're doing to go drive somebody. So the bigger pool of volunteers we have, the more we're able to provide this service. And advocacy always is part of everything we do, advocacy for immigrant rights. We also have a very active interfaith community building initiative. Every year we have an interfaith Ramadan Break the Fast. The last couple of years have been at Edgewood College in their gymnasium, and we've outgrown it. Last May, our last iftar, we had over 300 people. So Muslims, Jews, Unitarians, Buddhists, Christians, everybody, people of no faith, come to our iftar, and people tell us that they look forward to it every year. So we're excited. Our next iftar is May 2nd of 2020, and we're looking for space. We also have a series of what we call sacred site visits. It's a new project this year, where we bring people to different congregations around Dane County. We've been to the Baha'i Center, we've been to the Deer Park Buddhist Center, we've been to St. Dunstan's Episcopal Church, we've been to Madison Christian Community, we've been to the synagogues, we've been to a couple of the different mosques, we've gone all over. And gives people a chance to learn a little bit about other faith traditions, and they go as a group, so they also get to learn about each other and to form friendships with people that they might not otherwise have had a chance to meet. Right now we're engaged in a project, and I want to tell you about it because the Wisconsin Unitarian Universalist State Action Network has just signed on as a partner to this project. It is Interfaith Organizing for Civic Engagement. So Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice is partnering with the Wisconsin Council of Churches on this project. It is a 14-month-long project. Right now we're in the first phase, which is outreach. So I'm reaching out. And what we're doing is we're organizing in faith communities around the state to get people involved in voter education, voter registration, get out the vote activities, particularly targeting minority and low voter turnout areas, and doing everything that we can in partnership with the League of Women Voters and the NAACP and the UUs and the Interfaith Coalition of Greater Milwaukee. We are Many United Against Hate signed on as a partner. So we are trying to reach out to as many different organizations and faith communities around the state as possible to do this organizing. Because as members of the faith community, you are trusted sources of information. And people trust people of faith and trust clergy and lay leaders to give them the right information. And so going out to help register people to vote, going out to do registration drives, going out to do voter education, candidate forums, town hall meetings, and then leading up to election year 2020, as many get out the vote activities as possible, whether it be canvassing, phone banking, giving people rides to the polls, arranging for shared rides and carpools, whatever we can do to get people out to vote around the state. It is a nonpartisan activity. We don't care who you're voting for. We just want you to get out and vote. So this is some of the work that we are engaged in. We are a small but mighty organization. We really appreciate the support of the congregations that are part of our coalition, part of the Dane Sanctuary Coalition, part of Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, and all of you who come out to help with all of our programs and projects and activities. And we really appreciate your membership in the Dane Sanctuary Coalition. In the 2018 elections, we created cards that were pledge cards that said, "I pledge to vote." And it's a really weird psychological thing that's been studied, that if people fill out a pledge card that says, "I pledge to vote," even if they don't send it to anybody, they're more likely to vote. So we have pledge cards, and I'm going to make new ones for 2020. And they had, for Dane County, they had information on how to get to Union Cab, which provides free rides to the polls every year. And for the statewide, I had a link to a statewide website that connected people to carpooling to the polls, and then it had information on how to find your polling place. So yeah, those kinds of informational things are really important. Thank you for doing that. I just came back from El Paso. I'd love to come back another time because it's a whole other thing, but I'd love to come back another time and tell you about my trip. It's not every 6 months, it's every day. Every day there's something new. It's impossible to keep up. I mean, immigration lawyers are having a hard time keeping up. Sanctuary, I'll just give you like the thumbnail sketch of what Sanctuary is, and I would love to come to La Crosse and talk to your congregations about Sanctuary and why it's important and about immigrant justice in general. Sanctuary is two things. It is an act of hospitality. It is providing a safe space and kind of a breathing room for somebody who is at imminent risk for deportation. So they have a deportation order against them. We are not harboring, we are not hiding, we are not keeping them from pursuing their legal process. That would be illegal. We're not doing that. We are open and out and proud. We are providing sanctuary for this person. If we have somebody come into sanctuary, the first thing that we do is notify ICE. This person is in sanctuary. We notify local law enforcement, and we hold a press conference, because in addition to hospitality, the other aspect of sanctuary is to shine a light on the injustices of our very broken immigration system. So the person who's going into sanctuary is going to be somebody who is willing to have their story be made public and tell people how they are perhaps the primary caregiver for their family, perhaps the primary breadwinner for their family, and that they are being torn apart from their family that depends on them and relies on them and loves them, and are at risk for deportation when they've been in our community, when they are part and parcel of the fabric of our community, when they are our friends and our neighbors and business owners and students who sit next to our kids in class, and people who are working in the dairy industry and are working in the restaurant industry, and they are part of our community. And so we are going to give them that pause, that safe space to be in sanctuary while they go through their process. I can talk about what's going on at the border for a really, really, really long time, so I won't. But please do ask me back, because I'm very eager to share what I saw there. And it is horrendous. But I also want you all to know that as much as there's terrible things going on at the border and the need is tremendous, and I love all the people from Madison who have gone down to volunteer at Annunciation House and at Casa Alitas and our immigration attorneys who have gone down to volunteer, but there's a crying need right here in Madison. We have asylum-seeking families right here in Madison. Some of them are homeless. They are all looking for legal representation. They are all looking for employment. They're looking for stable housing. The need is tremendous and overwhelming. So as you think about donating to places at the border, think about also donating here. We have a fund called the Immigrant Assistance Fund. It is housed with the Madison Community Foundation. If you just Google Immigrant Assistance Fund, you will get to their donate page. It is administered by the Immigration Collective or Collaborative, which is seven organizations, Centro Hispano, Literacy Network, sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head. There's seven organizations that work together and administer this fund. And those funds go for the Community Immigration Law Center, SILC, to help pay for their immigration attorneys. It goes for bail and bond to get people out of detention. You know, we have two detention centers in Wisconsin, right, in Racine and in Dodge County. It goes for emergency food aid for asylum seekers who are here who have... When you're an asylum seeker, you're here because you have a sponsor, so you're here legally. You have a piece of paper from ICE saying, I have a sponsor so I can be here legally. But you have no access to services. You're not eligible for food stamps. You're not eligible for Badger Care. You're not eligible for housing assistance. You're not eligible for anything. And you come basically with the clothes on your back, and if you're lucky, maybe a backpack full of stuff. And that's it. That's what you got. So there's a huge need here in Madison. So if you feel so moved, please make a donation to the Immigrant Assistance Fund. They really, really could use your support. And in our interfaith community building, we have really good connections and relationships with the Baha'i community, with the Sikh community. We're trying to make better connections with the Buddhist and Hindu communities. That's been kind of a struggle. We have amazing relationships with the Muslim community with the African American community. I haven't really been surprised. I mean, there's some issues where we can work better with some groups than with others. You will be surprised to learn that the Dignity at Work Coalition has as its membership Planned Parenthood, and the Wisconsin Catholic Conference doesn't officially belong because they don't join coalitions, but they will sit at the table with Planned Parenthood and be very polite. in addition to being the executive director of Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, I'm also the chair of Wisconsin Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. When we founded Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, some of my favorite nuns in the world came to me and said, we love what you want to do, we want to be part of it, but not if you're going to be working on abortion. So I said, okay, well, Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice will never engage in reproductive justice work. We'll never do anything anti-choice, but we don't do reproductive justice work, but I do it over here with Wisconsin Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, so I don't feel so bad. Wisconsin Faith Voices does stand very strongly with the LGBTQ community, and I haven't heard from the nuns that they have a problem with that, so who knows? It's all very confusing. It's a foundational principle of ours that we always take the lead from whatever community is most directly affected by whatever issue we're addressing at the time. So Voces de la Frontera and Centro Hispano are the two lead organizations of the Dane Sanctuary Coalition, and we take our marching orders from them. So we engage in sanctuary because they asked us to. We do it in the way that they told us is the best practices and what they want to see. When we engage in advocacy campaigns, we do it because Voces called us and said, this is what we're working on right now and what we want you to bring your folks out to. The driving program started because the lawyers started calling us and saying, hey, do you have anybody who can drive somebody? So all of our programs and all of the advocacy work that we do are directly led and organized by Voces and Centro. So they tell us what to do, and we do it. In terms of measuring outcomes, that's something that we're struggling with right now, and particularly with the asylum-seeking family that we're helping right now. One of the things that we're working toward after they are settled into stable housing is doing kind of a community-wide debrief and trying to gather all the documentation and all of the experiences that the volunteers who have worked with the family have had, and trying to come up with lessons learned and best practices so that we can do this better next time. We did it very much on an emergency basis, and you know, it was a little chaotic at first, but we've gotten way more organized since then. I think we'll be in a much better position the next time that we have either an asylum-seeking person who needs shelter or somebody who wants to go into sanctuary. And we will have somebody asking for sanctuary. I've had to turn down 5 people in the last 6 weeks. It's a horrible thing to have to do. But we had this family, and they took up all of our volunteerism and finances and mental energy and emotional energy. A woman who needed sanctuary, we had to say no to, and she's now in sanctuary at Ascension Lutheran Church in Milwaukee. And you know, we're helping as much as we can to advise them. We shared our Dane Sanctuary guidelines with them, and you know, have offered to be there if they need our help or advice on anything. One of our immigration attorneys told me that he has somebody, a client who he thinks might need sanctuary soon. And I just keep saying, check back with us, because when this family finds stable housing, we might be in a position to help. And then we've had 3 requests for people who were leaving detention in Dodge County and had no place to go. And I don't know where they went. So I am absolutely sure that once this family is settled, that we will have other requests. So stand by with your volunteer hours, because we really will be needing it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and our closing words will be read by Patty Stockdale.
We affirm that love is our greatest purpose. Accepting one another is the truest form of faith living. The search for truth is our constant star. We pledge our hearts, minds, and hands to challenge injustice with courage, to find hope in times of fear, and to live out Unitarian Universalist values every day as a beloved community. Thus we covenant with each other and with all that is sacred in life. Jay Abernathy.
Well, thank you all for coming. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you and greet your neighbor. Then join us for coffee and conversation afterwards. Thank you, everyone.